Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
Begins in the 10th chapter of Romans and verse 18. Romans 10, verse 18. As the inspired apostle continues to discuss the theme of the spiritual conditions of the Jews, showing that they are in need of salvation, that they cannot be saved by the old law, that they must of necessity come to Christ. We had just finished studying last week one of the most logical presentations of the way of salvation that you find in any one place in the Bible. And that is where the Apostle Paul points out that salvation being the goal, it is obtainable if one will call upon the name of the Lord. But before one can call, he must believe. Before one can believe, he must hear. Before one can hear, there must be the preaching of the Word. And faith cometh by hearing, hearing by the Word of God. And then that pathetic and prophetic word from Isaiah that not all have believed, not all would obey. And then he's asked a question or two, beginning here with verse 18, about the Israelite people, who for many years had been God's chosen people and of all people should have been ready to have accepted the Christ when He came, His characteristics having been described, His work having been outlined, the prophecies pertaining to Him were before them, and they could see and did know of the miracles that He did and all the various evidences that were presented. And then he says, but I say, have they not heard? Now, faith cometh by hearing. Is the rejection of the Jew, by the Jew, of Christ, to be attributed to the fact that they haven't heard? He said, have they not heard? Yes, verily their sound went into all the world, and their words unto the ends of the world. That wasn't the problem. They had heard. That's not the problem with a lot of people. You know, with all the various avenues, the various media that we have today, and brethren, are you using it in spreading the gospel? Television, radio, printed page, public proclamation, Bible classes, individual studies, many other things. It's not because with many people, certainly not in our environment, with many people it's not because they have not heard. They have heard. The Word has been preached and presented. But I say, in verse 19, did not Israel know? Well, that wasn't the problem either. They had heard and they knew. But still, they rejected. You know, friend, today, and it's a very sad thing to have to realize, that there are people, probably of your acquaintance, as it is with mine, they've heard the Word, they know the Word. They do not act upon that Word. They just simply are dead set. They will not comply with what the Word of God says. Now, I think it goes back to what Brother Mason suggested to us maybe last week or the week before. You can present to many people, book, chapter, verse, thus saith the Lord, and it really does not make an impression upon them. Now, a few decades back, when there was greater respect for the Bible as the Word of God, a greater respect for things religious and moral, generally speaking, when you cite the Bible to people, you say, well, that pretty well settles it. That's it. There it is. But with so many, that is simply not the case anymore. Brethren, we have to give credit, if that's the right word, where credit is due. Those who would undermine faith in God have done a tremendous job and have been very successful in polluting the thinking of many people that it really doesn't make any difference what you believe or what you do or if you don't believe anything and do nothing. They have been very successful in undermining people's confidence in the authority of the Bible. And on the other hand, possibly we haven't done as good a job as we ought to show to people why we don't just guess, we know the Bible to have come from God. And so people hear it, many people know it, but they still ignore it. And Paul now cites a statement by Moses when Moses saith, I will provoke you to jealousy by them that are no people, and by a foolish nation I will anger you. Now, the foolish nation of which he speaks, and them that are no people, that refers to the Gentile people. The Jew was used, the Jewish nation, was used by God to bring salvation to all mankind. We know that. That's the unfolding of the scheme of redemption. They were a part of it. We know that to be so. The Jew rejected it themselves. The very ones who helped to bring it into being, they rejected it. But the Gentiles, having the opportunity to hear it, did receive it, generally speaking, far more readily than did Jews. And so it was God's hope and intention and purpose, possibly, to motivate Jewish people, seeing the blessings abundant that came to Gentiles, knowing of the blessings, both spiritual and particularly spiritual and some physical, upon them that obeyed the gospel, maybe they would be provoked out of jealousy to look into this thing again. Maybe we better take a second look at the gospel. Maybe we've turned our back on something that we ought not have turned our back upon. And Moses had said that. Moses had foretold the use of the Gentiles to save the Jews, just as God had used the Jews to save the whole world. And he quotes another prophecy in verse 20. But Isaiah, and that refers to Isaiah, is very bold and saith, I was found of them that sought me not. I was made manifest unto them that asked not after me. Why, that was the Gentile people. They didn't seek God. They had sought their own way, as Romans chapter 1 and 2 certainly pointed out, particularly Romans chapter 1. They weren't looking for truth. They weren't the ones that were looking for the Messiah. They weren't the ones to whom these prophets had been made. They didn't seek after God. But when the gospel was preached, they found the things of God by their acceptance of the gospel. And God made himself manifest to them. He just showed himself to them, even though they were not asking of. And isn't it strange? We bring this out several times in chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11. The ones who should have been anticipating the coming Messiah and readily received him, turned away from him. The ones that were rather indifferent, didn't care, or didn't even know when they had the opportunity and it was extended to them, they were more favorable to it. Verse 21, but to Israel he said, in contrast now to the Gentiles, look at the Israelites. All day long I have stretched forth my hands unto a disobedient and gainsaying people. That's an expression that I think reflects divine disappointment on the part of God and the people he chose. He is saying, in essence, look how many times I have extended my hand to you, as it were. And certainly down through their history, wasn't that the case over and over again? But you were a people that just would rebel against you. You were a people that would not obey. You know the Lord must have been grieved over the attitude of the Jews and grieved over the spiritual condition in which they found themselves because of their rejection. And he continues this theme in chapter 11. I say then, hath God cast away his people? Now this is the question that's going to dominate chapter 11. Has God therefore just brushed them off? He's asking in essence, does God no longer care about them? Is God no longer concerned? Does God have the attitude? They had their chance, they muffed it, they blew it, they didn't take advantage of it, away with them. Is that God's attitude toward those who rejected the gospel? And then Paul responds with this oft-familiar phrase, God forbid. And you know what that means, the idea of that. Why, that's unthinkable. It literally means, may it not be so. Certainly that's not the case. Now, they were not in favor, pleasing to God, and they were not favorable before God, but it's not because God has brushed them aside. It's been some other way that this has come about. Actually, it's come about because they brushed God aside. It's not because God has just wiped them off and forgotten about them. And today, when any person or group of people turns away from God or ignores God or pays no attention to God, it's not because God doesn't care about them. God forbid, Paul says. Why, certainly that's not it. It's because they seemingly don't care for God. But now, Paul was a Jew, and Paul had accepted the gospel. And he says, for I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham, of the tribe of Benjamin. Now, look at here. It's not because God didn't want the Jew. It wasn't because God ignored the Jew. It wasn't because God cast the Jew away. Look at here. There's some of us who are Jews. We're in the fold. We're following the faith. That within itself, right there, is evidence enough to know that God wanted the Jew to be saved by Christ. And God hath not cast away his people which he foreknew. And then look in verse 2 at the word what. W-O-T. I got to say a little bit about that word, just a little bit. That is an archaic word. That's an obsolete word. That's a word that we don't commonly use in our conversation today. That's a word, however, in any updated modern English dictionary you can find. I said all that to say this. There be those who take great delight in trying to heap disparaging things upon the King James Version of the Bible. And they will say, why, it's just full of errors. Look at that word, what? That's the wrong word. Nothing wrong with it. Not a thing wrong with that word. If they watch what they're talking about, they wouldn't say that. The word what means no. We say no instead of what. It's an archaic word. It's not wrong. It's just obsolete. We just don't talk about that anymore. Just like you don't get in the automobile and say, well, I'm going home in my horseless carriage. You don't talk that way anymore. You don't use words like that anymore. Language has changed. But it's not wrong. And people just get on a high horse to want to... I'll tell you why people want to cut down the King James Version, brethren. They don't like what it teaches. It doesn't suit. It won't accommodate their new ideas, newfangled doctrines, and they have a hard time getting around it. And the only way they can do it is to cast criticism against it and point to such things as that. Well, I told a fellow one time, I said, look, I can tell a person that what means no a whole lot easier than I can explain away the doctrine of salvation by faith only that you find in your New International Version. I don't believe you can explain that away. But if you watch you're talking about, if you watch what you're talking about, why, you know that what means no. And it's ridiculous to cast off a reliable version on such silly things as that. And you may gather that I don't talk to that a little bit. All right. Know ye not what the Scripture saith of Elias, and that refers to Elijah, how he maketh intercession to God against Israel, saying, Lord, they have killed thy prophets and dig down thine altars, and I am left alone, and they seek my life. But what saith the answer of God unto him? I have reserved to myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to the image of Baal. Even so then, at this present time also, there is a remnant according to the election of grace. Now this is what Paul is saying. Yes, it is sadly true that most of national Israel has rejected Christ, but not everybody. It may look like it's most everybody, but not everybody. Paul says, I am exhibit number one to show that he hasn't cast them all off. And he goes back and refers to an occasion that you read about in 1 Kings 19 when Elijah had just had a great victory over the false prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel. And even so, he had to flee for his life because Jezebel was trying to kill him. And he went out into the wilderness and he was just frustrated and discouraged and thought everything was hopeless. And he said, Lord, I'm the only one in the whole land that cares anything about you anymore. You'll feel that way. Elijah felt that way. So if you get to feel it that way sometimes, you're not the first one. Probably won't be the last one. Not even the only one. But it's just, well, it just ain't so. It hasn't been 48 hours. I got a letter from an individual. And in that letter, this was one of the questions. Is everything bad? Very despondent, very discouraged, very disgusted, very down. Is everything bad? Well, that's not a hard question to answer. You can bet your bottom dollar it's not. There's a world of good left. There are a lot of good people. When I see people out helping their brother, when I see people tending to the sick, when I see people working hard to earn a livelihood for their family, when I see people trying to rear and train their children in the nurture and the admonition of God, when I see people coming to Bible study, when I hear songs of praise going up before God, when I see people trying to stand for what's right before others, you can know everything's not bad. Sometimes we just focus our attention too much on the black, and we don't see the good. It's like a fellow one time, had one about as big as that screen. Oh, by the way, I'm going to use that screen Sunday. Pray for me. Put that big screen, had a big sheet up there, and he put a black spot on it, about that big, right in the middle of it. And he said, now, what do you see? Well, 99 people out of 100, I see a big black dot. And they said, I see a big black dot, I see a big black dot, I see a big black dot. He said, doesn't anybody see all of this white around that thing? I think that's a pretty good illustration sometimes. There are a lot of things in our world that would surely make you feel like Elijah. But brethren, seeing the spiritual blessings that we have, seeing the relationship with God that we are privileged to enjoy. When we can just look round about us and see people doing things that just magnify the goodness within their heart that they've partaken of from their Lord, and it's because they're following their Lord, we'll never come to the point to ever say, is everything bad? So Paul is saying here, look, most of the Jews may not have obeyed. That isn't all you can talk about. There's a remnant. There are still some. There are still those who have obeyed. That within itself is evidence. It gives answer to the question, hath God cast away His people? Absolutely not. And we're going to see how His arms are still outstretched, even to the Israelite people. And then in verse 5, he talks about the remnant according to the election of grace. Now, when you see that word election, it refers to those chosen. We have an election. We vote for people. Somebody wins the election, they are those chosen. That's the idea. Now, God has chosen certain ones to be His people, too. Who? Why, those that obey His will. Now, He didn't say, you are chosen, and you are chosen, and you are chosen. He's saying, that anybody that follows My will, you're the ones that's chosen. And by what process are we chosen? By what scheme is it available to us to be among those that are God's people? Why, it's by a system of grace. Unmerited favor. Not something that we have earned, even though there is something that we are to do. And so with that introduction of the election of grace, chosen by the grace of God, counted because of the grace of God to be God's chosen people, he enters into a discussion here about grace and contrasts grace on the one hand and salvation by grace on this hand with salvation by works of merit that men do as if they could earn salvation, which we can't do. Now he says in verse 6, and if by grace, it is no more of works. Otherwise, grace is no more grace. But if it be by of works, then it is no more grace. Otherwise, work is no more work. Now that language is not the clearest in the world. But the idea is this. Well, first we got to get this clearly in mind. When the Bible talks about works, don't jump off to a conclusion. As one fellow said, don't jump to collision. Don't just say, well, this what it means. Well, maybe that. Because there are different kinds of works in the Bible. There are works under the old Mosaic law, and the Jews were trying to be saved by those. There are works of goodness and righteousness by which we would earn merit, salvation. God would owe us because, Lord, I've been so good, you owe me heaven. Oh, you'll never get to heaven that way. But there are also works of obedience. And when we perform works of obedience, we're not earning anything. We're just simply meeting conditions to receive a gift. And I've illustrated it before, and it's just as good now as it was when somebody told me about it. Hold out a $5 bill to Brother Bishop. You come up here, I'll give you that $5 bill. You notice I'm not doing it. You come up here, I'll give you the $5 bill. Why, he'd jump out of that seat, he'd grab it before I could finish telling him. And everyone of us know that he didn't earn that $5 bill. I gave him that $5 bill, but when did I give him that $5 bill? It's when he did what I told him to do. Now, that's a work of obedience. That's a work of meeting conditions. That's not a work of merit. That's not a work of earning anything. Salvation by grace is God's gift. It's not by works of the law. It's not by works whereby we earn it. But the salvation by grace includes meeting certain conditions. And this was the problem that the Jewish people had. Now, he's discussing the spiritual condition of the Jews. He's asking the question, has God cast away His people? No. Salvation is open to them. But they've got to learn that it is by the grace of God and not by an old law that's already been nailed to the cross. And they couldn't get that through their skulls, so to speak, and into their hearts, as they should. And that's the reason they were still alienated from the good favor of God. So in verse 7 he says, what then? Israel hath not obtained that which he seeketh for. Now they sought for the Messiah. They sought for redemption. They sought for salvation. But they didn't obtain it. Why? Well, they were trying to go by a wrong system. We've already noted that back over here earlier. In verse, one had obtained and the other had not obtained. Here it is, 9:31. I knew it was in there. I just talked about it last week. Where in verse 30 he says, the Gentiles have attained, but Israel hath not attained. And he told why in verse 32, because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by works of the law. Now this is their problem here. Israel had not obtained what they sought for, but the election, Those that had been chosen because of their acceptance of the Lord, they have obtained it, and the rest were blinded. And this idea of being blinded is that they've so hardened their heart that they would not see. And folks, listen to me. There is a difference between could not see and would not see. Now, sometimes we waste our time in trying to teach people things. And I don't think we ought to ever be too quick to just cut something off. But you know, after you tell somebody something three or four times and they still just pay no attention to it and they just keep coming back with the same old stuff, you understand, look, I've already answered that two or three times for you. And they just keep ignoring it. I'm inclined to ask and do. Now, I'm happy to answer this question again for you, but I want you to answer me one first. What is it? After I tell you the truth about it, is it going to make any difference to you? Now, a lot of people think that they can hear the truth and just ignore the truth, and it won't make any difference if they hear the truth. It's not because they could not see. It's because they would not see. Just determined they're not going to see. And when a person hardens their heart and consciences to such an extent, even the beautiful gospel of Jesus Christ will not penetrate them. But in verse 8 he says, and he cites two Old Testament passages, one here from Isaiah and another from David, according as it is written, God hath given them the spirit of slumber, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear unto this day. Now, when it says God has given them the spirit of slumber, the idea behind it is God has allowed them, if that's what they chose, to just go spiritually to sleep. That's what they want. They just want to go into a spiritual stupor. Why? God will let you. He's not going to force us to do right. He's not going to make us do right. If we want to choose to be in a stupor, all right, that's your choice. You have the right and the power to make a choice. Of course, you're going to bear the consequences of your choice, you understand? But you can do that. The Lord constantly warned people about having eyes but not seeing. Having ears but not hearing. There's more to hearing than just sound. Sound can fall upon the eardrum. But to hear and heed is what the Lord wants. And the idea of hearing comprehends and includes the idea of understanding and following through on understanding. Here were the Jews doing just like Isaiah said they did. They were in a spirit of slumber. They should not see. They should not hear. And David one time said this of them, let their table be made a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a recompense unto them. Let their eyes be darkened that they may not see and bow down their back always. What's your table for? You got a table at your house. You put your feet under it with great regularity. Why do you go to the table, anybody? Anybody. Surely you know. What do you go for? Eat. Good. It's all in eat. One word. Three letters. Eat. What do you eat for? Well, pull in a little while I'm talking here now. What do you eat for? Sometimes people don't think I ought to. What do you eat for? Huh? Yeah. Nourish the body. Survival. I love that better. Yeah, it takes about three, four, five times a day just to survive sometimes, doesn't it? All right, now here is that upon which you feed, Paul says, but it's become a snare. What's a snare? Trap. As a man, you'd get rabbits and squirrels and everything else. You'd get a snare for them, wouldn't you? Here is that which God has given upon which you were to feed. That was the law of Moses. That was to guide them through the time until the coming of Christ. That was their spiritual guide. That was the divine regulation. Here was your table, and what has happened to this that God gave you? Why, you let it become a trap to you. It's become a stumbling stone to you. It's become a problem and a hazard to you. And you've just darkened your eye. You've heard the story about the man who said he just had so many rats in his barn. Brother said, I know how to get rid of those rats. How's that? Say, let me get on one side of the barn, I'll make noise. And says, they'll run out the other side, and you can then just shoot them. Blow them out with a scatter gun. No, it won't work. Won't work. Why? They won't do it. Oh, he just argued. He said, try. Try. Well, he reluctantly agreed to try. So he went on the side of the barn, he rattled the noise and everything. Didn't hear any gunfire. Said, don't you see any rats? Don't see a rat. There's something wrong here. He rattled it again. No gunfire. Don't you see any rats? No rat. Stepped around the barn, and they sit. No wonder he doesn't see a rat. He's not looking. I sort of get amused at people talk about, you can't see the Bible alive. Well, it's a surefire sense you're not going to see it alive when you're not even looking at it. And most are not looking at it. And some who are looking at it are looking through colored screens of their creeds and their feelings and their ancestors and their manuals and their catechisms. And surely you're not going to get it right then. You're not going to get the right color out of it then. And here he says their eyes are darkened that they may not see. And this idea of bow down their back always. Just see a person who's bent down, he's carrying a burden that he can hardly and really can't successfully carry. And that's what's going to happen to anybody that just rejects the gospel of Christ. They'll carry a burden that'll break their spiritual back. You know, that used to worry me too about here the Lord wants me to obey and the Lord sends me a strong delusion, but how does he send that delusion? He allows me to make my own choices. And he just says, Brother Jim, if that's what you want, brother, you can have it, but that's not what I'd like for you to do. And that was the problem here with the Israelites. It's not because he's answering this question, is it? Has God cast them off? Not at all. What's wrong? They're not seeing any wrath. They're not looking. What's been given to them to nourish them to the time of Christ, they've let that become what they're falling over. All right, then he goes on. There he begins to reason. I say then, have they stumbled that they should fall? Was this the idea? Have they so stumbled? There's no hope for them. Was this God's intent that they would stumble? It comes up again. God forbid. But rather, through their fall, salvation has come to the Gentiles for to provoke them to jealousy. Now, keep in mind, I said that God had used the Israelites as he had to bring salvation to everybody. The Jews rejected it. And when Paul would go to a place and preach the gospel to the Jews and they would reject it, what would he do? Turn to the Gentiles. And when the Jews rejected it, what did that provide for the Gentiles? A speedy opportunity to hear it and receive it. Now, that having been the case, and it had turned out here to the salvation of the Gentiles, he was hoping that, now that the Gentiles had received it, as I mentioned before, the Jews would be provoked to look at it again. Look at it. Here are Gentiles who are now God's chosen people. We once were God's chosen people. Maybe we better be God's chosen people again. Maybe we ought to look at this thing again. Maybe we ought not turn back from the gospel. And he says, now if the fall of them be the riches of the world, and the diminishing of them the riches of the Gentiles, how much more their fullness? If by the rejection of the Jews of the gospel was more speedily and hurriedly spread to others, what a wonderful blessing it would have been if they had received it. And even if they had received it now, how much faster and more widespread and more extensive would the reception of the gospel be to us? Has God cast away his people? Not at all. They had cast him away, but God's hand is still outstretched, isn't it? He still wants them to respond. And then he turns to his Gentile brethren and he said, for I speak to you Gentiles inasmuch as I am the apostle to the Gentiles and magnify mine office. If by any means I may provoke to emulation them that are my flesh and might save some of them. Paul is simply saying, I am hopeful. I am an apostle called to preach the gospel to the Gentiles that you Gentiles, being God's child, might even make them jealous. That's what emulation means, it's jealous. Might even make them jealous. And they might turn and be saved. What he's asking for here is for Gentile people to help him save his physical, fleshly brethren, the Jewish people. And then he said, for if the casting away of them be the reconciling of the world, what shall the receiving of them be but life from the dead? He pictures here the Jews having rejected Christ. Should they turn to Christ, he said it'll be like the resurrection from the dead. And that's a glorious thing. That's life again. And that's the way he characterizes what the acceptance of Christ would be should it be accepted by the Jews. Now, to the Gentiles, he said, For if the first fruit be holy, the lump is also holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. And if some of the branches be broken off, and thou, being a wild olive tree, wert grafted in among them, and with them partakest of the root and the fatness of the olive tree, boast not thyself against the branches. Now, I think that first phrase of verse 18 goes to the idea that we talked about. Now, the first fruit. Who were the first fruits of the gospel? Jews. Therefore, these Jews that came to God through Christ They were holy. That showed God did not cast off His people. And when the Apostle Paul here, and he is stoutly condemning the Israelite people for rejecting Christ, but he didn't want them to think their total condition was without any ability to turn it around. They could. Individually, they could. The first fruits were holy. Why, if God accepted the first Jews, He'll accept any of the Jews, all the Jews that will respond to the gospel. If the root be holy, so are the branches. And they were the root and the branches of God's tree for a long time. And now you nurserymen ought to be able to get this. You'll get this quicker than I will. This is that to which He's appealing. The first fruits of you, they in Jerusalem. God accepted them. They were Jews. And if He accepted them, Jews then, why, He'll accept Jews now. And then He talks about two different kinds of branches. Here are some branches that were broken off. Here were the Jews. Some of them were broken off because of disobedience. The Gentiles were like a wild olive tree, but they were grafted in. And so being grafted in, they had come into good favor with God, and those broken branches were not in good favor. But He's telling the Gentiles, now look, Gentiles, you Gentiles, don't you develop an attitude toward the Jewish people like the Jewish people had toward you. Don't you Gentiles who are now Christians look down your noses at Jewish people and those who had rejected the gospel, as it's because you are so much better than they. That's not the case. That's the attitude Jews had you one time. Because they were God's chosen people, they looked on you as dogs. Now, don't you look that way. Don't you boast yourself against the branches, the Jews. But if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. The root, the Jewish people. It was through the Jewish people that salvation had come. It hadn't come through the Gentiles. Thou wilt say then, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, that's right. But there's something else to be said. Because of unbelief, they were broken off that I might be grafted in. And thou standest by faith, be not high-minded, but fear. For if God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest He also spare not thee. Now, don't you start boasting of your own righteousness, you Gentile converts. You're the wild olive tree that's been grafted in. But you keep in mind, the natural branches, the Jews, were broken off. You know why they're broken off? Because of unbelief. And don't you know if He'll break off a natural branch due to unbelief, He can break you off too. You're still subject to falling away. And you too can be lost if you don't stay grafted to the root. So He has words here for Jewish brethren. He has words for Gentile brethren. We'll stop there in verse 22. Next time He's going to talk about two contrasting characteristics of God. Not contradictory characteristics of God, but two very different characteristics of God. Start with verse 22.